WBQC, People Powered Radio. WVQC LP Cincinnati.
We can rebuild him. We have the technology.
95.7 FM.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Coming to you from Cincinnati's Computer Cooperative Studios, you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on WVQC LP Cincinnati 95.7 FM. WVQC LP, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. WVQC LP does not endorse any political campaign or candidates. The opinions expressed on Hemp Rock Radio do not reflect the views of WVQC LP, Media Bridges, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect the views of Hemp Rock and our guests. Thanks for listening. Welcome, Hemp Rockers, to Radio Free Queen City and the Monday edition of Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress and joint hosts, the Burn Man, and featuring the Pottsbury Bakery and Hemp Rock Cafe on WBQC LP 95.7 FM, the voice of the Queen City.
WVQC.7 is online at WVQC.org. Hemp Rock is online at HempRock.com. The Hemp Rock Hemp Line is at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP.
To talk to us during the show, call 513-564-9600. That's 513-564-9600.
And now, here's Hemp Rock Radio with all things hemp, marijuana, the drug war, and more, including guests, music, news, food, and lots of fun here on 95.7 FM WVQC LP, low power to the people. I'm the Happy Hemptress, and I'm speaking to my friend Chris, the Anarchist Ryan. All right, let's play the song so Chris can hear the opening segue clip for From Behind the Walls, now that he is outside the wall.
From Behind the Walls, commentary on life as a prisoner of pot in a Nebraska penitentiary, by Chris the Anarchist Ryan, Hemp Rock's prison correspondent.
Another day in prison, another day in prison, man, might just come and get you too.
What do you think about that, Chris?
Oh, that sounds fabulous. I'm impressed. I'm not sure where you got that music from. It's probably better than the Commander Cody segment that I was thinking of.
Well, our very own Burn Man found that on the internet, and I can find out who did that here in just a moment. But I actually do know, and I, at the moment, can't remember. I'll look it up in the folder real quick, and I'll tell you. So we can give a shout-out to the guys that did that.
Yeah, well, like I said, about the only thing I could think of that would have been a suitable piece would have been maybe Commander Cody and his Lost Planet Airmen's version of There's a Riot Going On.
Exactly. So now that you've been out of prison for a while, Chris,
well, just
how do you feel?
That is a darn good question. I kind of disoriented a little bit. So much of what I had before I got sent up has been lost. A house, 3 boats. 2 of my girlfriends died while I was in the joint. it's, you know, what happened to that $40,000 anyhow? And did I really get my money's worth? Obviously not.
Right.
And you know, I'm just sort of like, oh, kind of overwhelmed by everything. And there's an awful lot of everything to be overwhelmed by. So,
well, of course, I'm going to introduce you now to people listening on Hemp Rock Radio down at, of course, WVQC LP Cincinnati, 95.7 FM. Right now, though, we're at the Hemp Rock headquarters, and we are recording
located
with...
located in a secret laboratory.
That's right.
Deep,
it's the secret.
Below the bottom of the Ohio River.
The secret headquarters. That's exactly right. But, of course, I'm the Happy Hemptress, and I'm speaking to my friend Chris, the Anarchist Ryan. If you're regular listeners of the show, you know that for 17 months, well, maybe not exactly that as far as having the commentary. We got that started sometime after he was put away in Nebraska prison system. But he did a full 17 months, and throughout part of that, we ran a segment of commentary from Chris from Behind the Walls. And that was the segue intro to that segment. And now he has been released around the beginning of October. And this is your, although not live in the WVQC studios, live right here in our studios for air on WVQC. So we thank you for that. I know you're on your way to the Keys down in Florida to spend the winter.
Yes.
And
yes, I'm
unwind.
And actually, I think wintering over in the Florida Keys and working on mastering the Jim Shepherd cassettes will be a good thing for me.
Absolutely. So I appreciate you coming and sitting in so we can get your thoughts on stuff. But so it's not just myself and Chris the Anarchist. It's also Colonel Cannabis. He's sitting here joining in on the recording.
That's
how
right,
you doing?
Colonel Cannabis reporting for duty. We're doing great, and it's fantastic to see my old friend Chris the Anarchist out. I mean,
yes.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, when you think about the insanity, the asinine treatment of people. You have Chris, and of course, when you look at Tommy Chong, I mean, this just typifies the insanity of the drug war.
But Bullwinkle, that trick never worked.
But they keep pulling the same trick again. It is just an absolute waste of, and like he's saying, of not only what has happened to him. I mean, if you were a citizen and you were to come in and do this to a person, and in other countries, it is considered, I mean, it is diabolical. I mean, you think about, you know, communist countries that could come in and take you away from your family and put you in jail because of the way you think or the way you dress or the, what you grow on your land. And hell, we do that here. And the difference is, and I think we were talking earlier off air, at least with the old days when you had the Russians, at least they were worth somebody fighting. And you find out they're just bumbling idiots. And you find out now that the law's the same thing. It's a bunch of Barney Fifes, but they've got the right to just trample over you. It's depressing and insulting at the same time.
Well, of course, that's why it was always a fortunate thing that Barney Fife was only allowed to have 2 cartridges, and he had to carry them in his shirt pocket at all times.
Yeah, if we can only go back to that today, and we have police that are just using the idea of the Homeland Security too. As
well, I have always maintained that the Patriot Act and Homeland Security is nothing more than an extension of the drug war that was already in place.
And there's been so many cases. You don't have to get it from us, folks. You can just tap into the internet. There's been major media stuff on this. I mean, the vast majority of people that are investigated under the Homeland Security various acts are for simple domestic things, mostly drug using, drug dealing, suspected growing, things of that nature. That's what they do. They've got your handy, your gas and electric people. They go through a program in Ohio. I don't have the pamphlet put right here, but when I used to play MP, they handed it out. And they train people when you go into the houses of what to look for, what to smell for. And they're paid snitches on the government's payroll.
Now, I admit I'm a little stoned, so I was working on the board over here, making sure that the sounds were pretty good and looking stuff up. But so in talking about the Patriot Act and things like that, did you guys mention that this past week the Congress, actually the senators, voted, was 61, and then one rescinded and changed their vote from yes to no. So it went to 60 to like 38, I think, or some odd number like that. So it passed, and this is, I don't want to say it's an amendment because that's probably the wrong word, but it's taking away habeas corpus. They have now finally voted. And what's happening now is that habeas corpus is gone, and even Channel 19 this week, WXIX, local Fox network, the local news, was posing the question. So is this something that is the first time in, you know, the history of the Constitution we're losing important rights?
That's actually not true, because Abraham Lincoln
during the Civil War did the exact same thing.
But, yes.
Which is true, but that was, you know, and that did happen, obviously, but we got back to it. But then, you had a much smaller government, smaller enforcement.
On the other hand, in the Civil War, you had it was the first time you had a really massive expansion
of the federal government.
And the powers of the federal government, and Ohio was right at the center of that battle at that time. In fact, there was a so-called copperhead, a northern sympathizer
with the South,
who, by the name of Landingham, who actually got deported from Ohio and like thrown out of the country, basically, for being, you know, like an alien agent in effect. And he was arrested right here in Ohio in I believe it was Mason.
Okay.
Clement Landingham got thrown out of the United States of America for an anti-Lincoln speech he made here in Ohio.
Yeah. Now, back to this thing that the senators just did. Of course, I looked down the list of senators who voted for it, and of course, our very own Rob Portman voted for this. And so you guys need to look this up. Folks out there listening, look it up. I'm sure somewhere in this show I will talk about that. So, because, you know, this is being recorded on Friday prior to the airing of the program. And that is information that we're giving out anyway on the show about this. So you need to stay tuned and know what's going on with it.
And this is something that affects, I mean, it's not just dopers. If you think that the government, when given these powers, that they're just going to go after the dopers, you got another thing. You got another thing coming.
Well, now, and, you know, back to the show that we just aired this past Tuesday, Colonel Cannabis. Did you get a chance to tune in Tuesday with D. Riley talking about the Randy Weaver Ruby Ridge incident?
You had told me about it, and I'm, of course, very familiar. I was not able to hear it, but yeah, the Ruby Ridge, another perfect example of someone being basically set up in a nutshell in 30 seconds. Randy Weaver was a white separatist. He believed in separation of the races. He had gone
to... Yeah, not supremacist. You said that correctly.
Yeah, he's
he
a
was
separatist.
A separatist, not a supremacist.
Similar to the, you know, the Black Islamic Nation, they believe in separatism.
Yeah.
So what he did, he went to a meeting of some of these skinheads. And the federal agents that had infiltrated this group had seen him. Now, he had just showed up at the meeting, and that was it. And they got to him, and they wanted to use him as an informant. So what they did was he was selling some shotguns. They agreed to buy the shotguns, but they wanted them shortened. And, you know, he knew, like almost every other gun owner, that the arbitrary law is the gun barrels have to be 18 inches. And he had marked them, and what was unbeknownst to him was the measurement was incorrect because the federal informant made sure it was short. And I believe on...
Just
an eighth and a quarter inch short of what it was. And so that changed
the legal cut.
Yeah, from the legal cut. That changed it from a legal gun to possession of a short-barreled, dangerous ordnance, same paperwork that you'd have to get a legal machine gun. Possession of it is mandatory, jail time and fines.
And yeah, but it was probably, they said it was like maybe 90 days in jail. So something that could have been a few hundred, you know, maybe a couple thousand fines and maybe 90 days in jail, maybe. They did this entire two-year elaborate sting operation following his family around in the woods.
Yeah, they were there. This was all just to hold it over to his head. And what they did, too, is that on this charge is that they told him one court date, and then it was actually wrong. And it wasn't a mistake. This was done intentionally so that they knew that they had an idea that he was not going to show up at court.
It was a bench warrant.
It was a bench warrant. And what happened
after
is
he didn't show up for
but they gave him the wrong date to actually show up. So even if he wanted to show up, they gave him the wrong date, which would have been after the date that he was supposed to.
Yeah, 1 month after, actually.
Yeah, correct. And so they issued a bench warrant, and he was just up on his little mountain. And eventually, after they, and you know, people know the story, after they shot his kid and shot his wife and shot his friend and shot the dog.
And the dog. Actually, the friend, the young guy, Kevin, I think his name, did not get shot. He's the one who shot the agent. He didn't even see the agent. He was just shooting out into the woods because he knew that there was people shooting at them, and it already hit the dog and the kid.
A good time,
16-year-old teenager.
Good time to be shooting is when they start shooting back.
Right.
It's a drug war. It's not that much fun when only one side shoots. Right, I've always said that, being a colonel in the marijuana militia.
These people weren't doing drugs.
Oh, no. They were doing
religion.
The truth of the matter is...
What's that, Chris?
The truth of the matter is somewhat more arcane. We, by definition... do not need guns to win our fight. We, by definition, do not use guns to win our fight. We are fighting a psychological war. We are fighting a political war. We are also fighting a people's war, an information war, a war of concepts, a war of ideals, and a war of notions.
Yeah.
They are fighting a drug war.
Yeah.
We do not fight a drug war. We do not need a drug war.
Okay. This side, I mean, we've been doing this for so long now. Major local people like Mike McConnell, used to be on 700, Willie Cunningham, used to joke about, well, what do you expect? They're going to legalize this and people are going to make clothes out of it and stuff like that. And occasionally when Mike McConnell was still in town, I would call him up and just play old clips when he would say these kind of things.
Yeah.
And, of course, this has all happened. I mean, it is, you can go to any store and find food and clothes and oils and shampoo.
Kroger sells two different brands of hemp milk now.
Yes, they do. And my girlfriend actually is a manager of one of them, and they did have two brands in that particular store as well. So, yes, and this is, and like as Chris so accurately put, we don't need that because we are winning. I mean, we have seen it in 20
years. Not only are we winning, but... In fact,
we're winning. That's
what I said. I said we are winning.
We are winning. You have two governors that are pushing for legalization for medical use.
We are winning. And what we are winning is we are winning a cultural revolution in this country right now. We are winning a cultural revolution in this country right now. What we are doing is not losing. As revolutionaries, as people who are seeking to invoke a new vision, a different and better reality, we don't have to win, per se. All we have to do is keep from losing. They, on the other hand, must win. And the problem with that is that their struggle is designed in such a fashion that winning for them is impossible. Consequently, if we just retain resistance, we keep on occupying, we keep on smoking, we keep on making our voices and our presence heard and seen in various ways and places, we keep going to the Tea Party meetings, we keep going down to the encampments at the Occupy, whatever it is that we're doing, we keep on doing this, okay? You keep on doing this. You don't quit. You don't quit. And the reason why is because, first, they ignore you. Second, they laugh at you. Third, they fight you. And then you win.
Right. Gandhi.
Yeah.
And you can see it.
This is why we're going to win. And this is also why I will tell you that the war on drugs is a paper tiger. Paper yeah. tigers look extremely fearsome and scary when you walk up to them. But when you get up close and you see just a piece of paper and you can put your finger right through it, that's when you realize that they're no ways near as strong as they want you to think.
But you see that most, I mean, there's no one. My son's in college, and there's no one in college that believes that marijuana is some kind of dangerous drug. I mean, it's just, it is so matter of fact. It is so matter of fact if people use it, or it's just so matter of fact that they don't. They don't even think about it in that it's an illegal. It's just accepted, much like that human sexuality has been brought out. It doesn't, you know, 20, 30 years ago when I was in, or longer, when I was in high school, you know, gays, lesbians, these kind of things, it just really wasn't talked about. I mean, obviously, were there. We had a girl in our group we called Fred that turned out to be very accurate later, but we had no idea. Well, nowadays it's just part of the landscape. Nobody really thinks about it. Nobody really cares. And that's what we have to do. That's the part that you're talking about winning, is that no one's going to care what you do. So you smoke that. You see the shows on the dispensaries and the vast amounts of different people that are going to these dispensaries in California to be medicated. And of course, what it's also doing is they're not putting money in the big corporates, people that are putting the toxic drugs out. I mean, folks, just look at one of the drug ads, or take five of the drug ads and then string all of the side effects together. Weird sexual dysfunction, odd dreams, your liver is going to blow out, you're having stuff come out of your ears, your eyes, your nose. I mean, the side effects on all this stuff is incredible. And for what? To lower your cholesterol 5 points? It's incredible. So, yeah, the revolution is here, and it is affecting, and we are winning. And we'll know we'll win when it's just so accepted. I mean, when you look at it from 20, 30 years ago, when there was just nothing, to today, where, like I said, you can walk into any store and buy and use. And my Prince Charles even is building houses in England that use hemp.
The hempcrete bricks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's very funny, because just the week before I got busted, I was out there on Pine Ridge Reservation out in South Dakota,
yeah,
talking with Alex White Bloom.
You did get to stop and see Alex? Wonderful.
Yes,
I did. What a great man.
Yes, he is.
You're so lucky to be able to have done that.
And I've seen the little hemp adobe straw buildings that he's built.
Yeah.
I've seen the actual hemp that he used to build the buildings. I've seen the field where the DEA raided the place.
Yeah, and, three and or four times.
Yeah, they keep raiding and dropping it down, and then they forget the fact that this is like industrial hemp, and
right,
it's not like, you know, seedless. And so they chop the plants down and plow them into the earth, so next season
they come back even that. Stronger.
Yeah.
They grow on their own.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Well, in the old days, that's what they would clear briar patches with. You toss a bag of seeds into a briar patch, and it would choke it out.
Which is, you know, so,
like the old song that they say when they came down, we just sat there smiling, sitting on that big old sack of seeds. See, and again, that's for folks that, the industrial hemp is really the antithesis of anybody out there that is looking for medical, or those people who just want to get high.
Yeah.
Because the pollen would absolutely wreak havoc with people that are trying to grow for medical, or just want to get high. Like, that's something like I'm molesting kids. Like I'm a football coach anally penetrating young boys in a shower, but it wasn't pedophilia. I mean, folks, it makes me sick to even say that. But yet, if I have a joint in my, which I do at the moment, I'm in violation of the law. And she's got the lighter. Because she's a little stoned. I'm a lot stoned. I forgot the lighter. But this is the kind of stuff that goes on. And, I mean, really? I mean, this is sickening. And the prisons need to be filled with people like that, and not people like Chris. I mean, Chris is one of the best people you've ever met an intellectual, someone that is not going to be causing a problem for society unless your idea of society is non-freedom. If your idea of society is a draconian police state, then yeah,
understand
Chris is a very difficult person to live
understand
with.
That we have already lost that struggle. Understand that the United States of America is no longer the United States of America. Understand that we now live in a corporate fascist state where the functions of government and the functions of business have commingled to equal fascism. I speak to
military
this
industrial complex.
Military industrial prison complex.
The and
military
the synthetic
industrial
subversion.
Complex dogtails with the military industrial complex is only one half of a triangle. The other half of the triangle is called the prison industrial complex. And the two of them put together, it makes a triangle with industrial as the base on both sides, tying it up. The prison industrial complex supplying cheap and free labor, and the military industrial complex supplying an application for that labor.
The only good thing that's saving us right now is possibly just a little American greed, because if we had a politician that could come and take care of the industrialists like Hitler did and say, look, I'll get rid of your labor problems because we're going to get rid of the unions. If you could get some politician that would come into the business people and say, hey, you know, you won't have to worry about producing your product because we're just going to enslave X amount of people in jail, and then there's your working population. At the moment, industries usually are against the prisons doing anything, making chairs or almost anything other than growing food for themselves, until you get that politician that has the whole package, folks.
Now, I want to talk to Chris about it. Now, as I said, for those that you just tuned in, this is, of course, Hemp Rock Radio. I'm the Hemptress with Colonel Cannabis sitting in as co-host with our guest, Chris the Anarchist Ryan, who for the first time is doing a segment we're calling Outside the Walls instead of his segment From Behind the Walls that you've heard here, which was his commentary while he was life as a prisoner in a Nebraska prison. Now, part of the time, and I think we were talking earlier, Chris, you said 9 months of that you worked at a location in Omaha, Nebraska as a work release prisoner.
Yes.
And tell us real quick about that place, because then I want to get your opinion on it. You know, like as Colonel Cannabis just pointed out, in the prison industrial complex now, especially the private prison systems, they're getting the prisoners to make chairs and other things and toys, you name it. They're getting the contracts for prisoners that the average company would be getting contracts from companies to make. And it's putting the unions out of work by breaking them and then giving those jobs to prisoners. Now,
yes.
Tell us real quick about the place that you worked most of the time and even the other place. And
the place that I worked at most of the place.
First that, and then we'll go on to your feelings about it. But take that hit
that,
first.
That's got a bit of creeper on there, doesn't that one? Right,
yeah.
Folks,
that's a good sound. It's a good sound for people to hear because, again, he did 17 months in a prison in Nebraska, and now he can sit here at the Hemp Rock headquarters and smoke some medicine and then say his piece. That's the beauty of now being out.
The nice thing about what I was doing on work release is that it wasn't really prison industrial complex directly related per se at all.
Right.
It was actually legitimately work release.
Yes.
Now, what you're talking about with the
and that is the difference that I want you to talk about.
The industrial variants on what is your prison industrial complex in Nebraska, anyways, I won't speak to other places, is something called work detail.
Yes.
And when you're on work detail, you're quite literally a slave of the state. They give you a job, and you must do it.
Yeah.
If you don't do it, you go into the hole.
Right. And lose your good time.
Right. That's the other thing. You lose your good time.
Yeah.
Now, one of the curious tools that Nebraska has invented as a means of incentive for making prisoners behave themselves and want to get out of the system sooner is something called good time. Good time, the way Nebraska works it, half of your time that the judge sentences you to, you don't have to serve right off the top, provided you just don't get into trouble. You get good time. So
right.
I was sentenced
two for
to
two one.
Right. I was sentenced to 2 to 3 years I only had to serve 18 months.
18, not 17.
Well, when you count the month that I spent in jail waiting to make bond prior to being sentenced, that counts as one of the 18 months.
Gotcha.
And so I spent 17 months in the penitentiary and 1 month in a county jail waiting to make bond.
Gotcha.
And your work detail, it's like my work detail assignment, I had two of them, one in Lincoln and one in Omaha. And my work detail assignment in Lincoln was being a receiving clerk who tracked paperwork for inbound arriving trucks bearing parcels for the general warehouse of the Nebraska prison system.
So it was within the prison system itself.
Right. It
gotcha.
Was within the prison system itself, but it was doing work that would normally be contracted out to a private entity to do for a government agency.
Gotcha.
It was running a prison warehouse. And everything that came into the prison system, potatoes, boots, underwear, towels, soap.
Needless to say, I guess they figured since you were traveling with how many pounds of marijuana?
154.
That you could handle a warehouse of trucks with inventory.
Yeah, I thought you started with 155. You guys smoked a pound of weed in three states?
How dare you suggest that it was merely 3 pounds?
But I mean, but think about it. They figured you were handling that much. You could handle inventory in a warehouse.
Perhaps I hadn't thought about it.
They saw
your
skills.
Perhaps No. This is the sort of thing they try to do.
Sure,
was
of course
a fellow
it is.
Who was, you know, there was a fellow who was a lawyer who was working in the legal aid. The law library.
Yep, that's what I figured.
Yeah,
the library.
Working in the law library and would help people with things like their
filing appeals and getting their paperwork.
No, not appeals so much as
motions or whatever.
Just, you know, there's certain kinds of affidavits that you have to make in order to get certain documents in prison, such as driver's licenses, copies of your court records, that sort of thing. He wasn't actually filing motions; he was just putting in affidavits and requests for documents. But still, if you don't know how to read,
red tape.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't know how to read, how on earth are you ever going to know that you have to file a piece of paper with the judge in order to get the piece of paper back from the judge that says that you're, you know, going to have what you want, right?
No hablo.
Right, right. And so, you know, having a clerk in the law library to help people with simple filing matters for ordinary documents is...
Yeah. Well, one thing I can say about the system in Nebraska that you had to go through, that they if you're going to have to do any time in prison for marijuana, I guess it should be the best would be in the minimum security that you were in. So not to say that you had a vacation.
Obviously, you didn't have a vacation.
But if you had to choose on the scale of prison, I guess this would, you know, be the best scenario that you could have probably got.
It reminded me an awful lot of being in the Army, and I was in the Army, so.
Yeah. Now, of course, the downside is that your health declined while you were there somewhat.
Yes, considerably.
So tell us what happened with that, because that's something that people don't understand. They always think, well, the prisons are supposed to give you your medicine. Well, they don't.
They're supposed to, but a lot of times the way they give you your medicine is in such a mechanical and arbitrary fashion. They have, you know, however many prisoners they've got, and they've got one doctor and a couple of nurses, right? And how do you administer with such limited facilities and resources and do so adequately and successfully in the face of such huge numbers?
I'd say neglect a lot of them and just say you're SOL is kind of what I would say probably.
Well, that does happen to a certain degree, but also what happens is that they just, you know, okay, you're a such-and-so, here's your such-and-so pill. You're a such-and-so, here's your such-and-so pill. Right? And it's like, you know, people would be on this list called pill call list, right? You'd go up there and you'd have to take your medicine.
And give you the little white sample cups with the pills.
Right. And it's just very formalized and very mechanized, and it happens really fast, and it's really simple, but it doesn't actually take into note or account the needs of the prisoners. Now, in my particular case, I developed an infection in the little toe on my left foot about a week and a half before I got out of prison.
Oh, all the way to the end.
Yeah, all the way to the end, and then I get this little infection in my little toe. And the funny thing is I was afraid at that point that if I went to the hospital system and got out of the minimum security program that I would lose good time for going into the hospital because I was no longer participating in the personalized program that the state had set up for me. And, of course, not complying with the personalized program is grounds for denying or losing good time, which is a way to make a 18-month sentence turn into a 3-year sentence.
And that's not that show from the 70s, Good Time, right? Yeah, I mean, that wasn't...
Not even.
I think that would be cruel and unusual punishment for you 18 months having to watch that show over. I just wanted to clarify.
Well, it was almost that bad having to watch The Housewives of Orange County.
Yeah.
You got a serious point there.
Boy, that would be like hell to me.
Well, as I understand it,
put in behind bars and forced to watch those programs.
Well, as I understand it, didn't the Federation make a treaty with Cardassia at some point to protect the planet Earth from their invasion? I believe
the Kardashians.
Are we talking about Kim? You know, you really got to follow. You got to follow your heart.
No, it gets better than that, man.
It gets
better than that, man.
It's your heart.
You've
got to follow your heart.
This treaty that the Federation signed with the Kardashians obviously was flawed because although it may have protected us from having them take over the planet Earth, it obviously failed to keep them from attempting to seize the airwaves. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I still say you just have to follow your heart.
It is like an alien race.
I was shocked. I mean, I was shocked though. And so I had to take a little tab. But you know, hey, I never seen it coming. A $20 million wedding, and that wedding was so fake. Big Time Wrestling was yelling, "That's fake." I mean, you know, but
Spoken as a true fan of the Sheik and the Big O, what can I say?
They don't have anybody like the Sheik. The Sheik, the Sheik. Yeah. See, that was those were a good wrestler. Oh, you got a couple. You know.
So now, Chris, now that you're
don't
out
see me.
From out, you know, on the outside of the walls, it's okay. You know, now you are also one of the lucky ones. You did the time, and you're not on paper parole.
No.
Parole, as they say. So you're free and clear.
Yes.
So with that in mind, then tell us about the job that you had. What the place is. Let's give a little shout out to the restaurant where you were working the last nine months.
I want to say some very nice things about a guy by the name of Tom Foster.
Tom Foster.
Tom Foster owns a little restaurant out in Omaha, Nebraska, called McFoster's Natural Kind Cafe. He and his wife, Mary McClanahan, who's the Mick in McFoster's.
I get it.
Wouldn't it be Foster's and the Mick there?
They own a way cool little hippie vegetarian restaurant in Midtown, Omaha. It serves organic and vegetarian food. During season, much of the food is actually...
locally grown?
Yes, locally grown on Tom's own farm.
Wonderful.
On the outskirts of Omaha. And, you know, it's just like salad mixes and cucumbers and carrots and
wonderful.
Onions and parsnips and peppers and, you know, any kind of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
He grows that stuff out there in his farm and his greenhouses and brings it
sells
into
it
his restaurant.
Sells
it at the restaurant. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and everybody who works there, it turns out, is interested in... like natural foods and
hemp.
Well, natural foods, hemp, organic nutrition.
Well, natural. You mean food the way you whether
real
you're food.
Food
as opposed to you know, manufacturing, machine planting it on the ground, putting it in some kind of weird soil substitute that's genetically altered.
And the other thing is, they have the most fabulous juicer.
Oh, I bet. I love
the
juicing.
The big, huge, industrial-strength juicer about the size of a small volcano that sits and rumbles mightily upon the bar.
Love juicing. Love that. That's fantastic. I wish we could have a place like that locally.
Well, you probably do. You just haven't found it yet.
Well, there is a place on the east side, I'm not sure the name, that does some juicing, and then I think there's a little bit of a farmer's market in there that the people come in. And, of course, we have Findlay Market downtown.
If any of these fine places need a sponsor, this is a perfect show for those kind of places to sponsor. So if you know anybody that has that type of place,
yeah, to underwrite. Absolutely.
Yeah, tell them no, because we would like frequent that. And
I
a
don't
lot of
know
people
though
that, listen,
that there is actually a themed restaurant like that where the owner is also the farmer. They might have. There's some vegetarian places, a couple of them in town, but I don't know that they're actually farming the stuff. They might be supporting
the
local farmers.
Not closed though. Well, we got Bob Evans. You know, Bob's down on the farm.
Yeah, but he's on the farm. Yeah, kind of smells down on that farm, and my gravy and biscuits is better than theirs. So, but
gravy
so
and biscuits
so
is a contentious subject. Now, anywhere
so,
you go,
so you're a prisoner.
I was a prisoner of the pot possession.
And you are sent to work off your sins and transgressions against society at a natural hippie store.
Restaurant.
It's more like restaurant. I kind of put a smooth number on them, you know? It's like they let me go to the only place in the city of Omaha. Here's how it worked. I was on work detail in Lincoln, Nebraska, home of the Cornhuskers, who recently switched alliances from the Big 12 to the Big 10. And
did that cause a lot of problems out there? Were they with that, or did that?
Somewhere.
That's big time. I mean, Texas, they got big football there, but you know, I know for
Nebraska,
a fact Nebraska,
they love their football team out there. Oh my, it's crazy. It's the only place in the world I've seen where the newspaper has four pages of football stories about the same team 4 days a week.
That's a fact. That's a fact. Facts.
The sports section of the Omaha World Herald is basically Nebraska football and everything else.
Nebraska über alles.
Yeah, pretty much. And so anyhow, I'm in Lincoln, which is the home of the University of Nebraska, and I get put out on the streets to go look for a job on work release the very same week that all the undergraduate students in Nebraska at UNL Lincoln are coming back for fall quarter.
And looking for jobs.
Yeah, right, and looking for the same jobs that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And so naturally, I didn't find a job. When you have a choice between hiring a pretty young college girl and hiring a crusty old ex-con.
Current con.
who are you going to pick?
Yeah.
And so, man, I didn't find a job. So I called the only businessman I knew in the entire state of Nebraska, Tom Foster, who runs this little restaurant, who, it turns out, Tom is also a political activist in Yippie, and have I've known off and on for many, many years as a result of this. I call him up and I say, Tom, you're the only guy, the only employer, the only businessman I know in the entire state of Nebraska. Can you hook me up with a part-time job? And he says, well, if you can get from Lincoln to Omaha, I'll give you a job. And I says, okay, well, I'll do that, and it might take me a little while to get there, but, you know.
What's the distance between Lincoln and Omaha?
Oh, maybe, I don't know, what, 70, 80 miles? Not that far. The trick is you get transferred from the prison institution at one stage to the prison institution at the other. And the magic words for getting this trick done is,
I know somebody
who will give me a job.
Yes.
He has promised that if you send me to him, he will give me a job.
Fantastic.
And so I told this to the people in charge, and they sent me from Lincoln to Omaha.
Fantastic.
When I got to Omaha, I had to start all over again from ground zero.
Lost your good time in doing that?
No, I didn't lose my good time because I was still following the personal program. I was merely transferred from one facility to another.
Okay.
And in fact, because I had not found a job in Lincoln, I had to go back to work detail status.
Gotcha.
And when I got to Omaha, I was on work detail status all over again, just like when I first got to Lincoln, which meant that I had to spend another 60 days in Omaha doing a work detail job.
Before you could go to McFoster's.
Right. And across the street from the work release.
Because so many small businesses will hold a job open for current cons for, months at a time while you're doing it. I mean, because that's the way it works in the regular world. I'm pretty sure. No, wait a second. It doesn't work that way at all. Okay. I was just stoned, folks. I have a reason for to be so messed up, but the government, they're supposedly straight. Continue. I was just...
Well, this was hardly a matter of routine government analysis, you understand. This was a matter of two political comrades cutting a deal and moving on from there.
Sure,
Tom is a Yippie, I am a Yippie, and therefore That's why Tom gave me the job.
Right, and held the job for you, which is the point.
The government, now, the government wouldn't see. I mean, the government guarding the barn, you could steal the horses, the barn, the farm, and the state behind them. The government wouldn't notice the damn thing.
So now, for that 2 months or so that you had to do more work detail before you got to go to McFoster's, what was that job?
Right across the street from the Minimum Security Work Release Institution was the Maximum Security Bad Prison.
Ooh, the murderers and rapists and
kidnappers. Yes, yes, where all the people from Group W Bench hang out.
Wow.
And
hopefully they're separated. Hopefully guys like you don't go into those maximum
security. My job was to go across the street to the administration block, which is the very first door you walk into, right where the warden has his office and where the secretaries are and such.
Mm-hmm.
And clean the toilets for the warden and
his personal
staff.
Hey, I'd take that job if I had to do it.
So for 2 months, I went over to the bad prison across the street.
To clean the warden's toilet.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing.
Was he full of shit?
Oh, yeah!
He was so officially, the warden in Nebraska was full of shit.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Now, it gets better than that.
Now, I just want to make this comment that in knowing this story and hearing it firsthand now, your experiences, is that the one thing you can say about at least this prison system, that folks like yourself, that they are putting a lot of trust into to let you hit the street, to even whether it's walk across the street to go clean the warden's toilet or go to McFoster's or whatever, because you are, you're not on an ankle bracelet. You could take off at any time if you chose
to. That is correct.
So they are totally trusting you to come back to their prison every night. And
the reason why.
Which is a good thing. It's great.
Well, the reason why is because in the modern electronic era, they pretty much got you down anyhow.
Yeah.
The only ID you have is your prison ID. The only documents you have are your prison documents. You don't have any keys. They don't let you have any money. You know, all this stuff. It's like, and they, in order to let you go somewhere,
they turned you into Amish. That's what it was.
Well, not only that, but then they also know exactly where you're supposed to be. You have to check out to go to here. Right. Once you get to where you go, you got to check
in. You were in Nebraska. Where are you going to go? Escape to Iowa?
Well, the funny
thing.
You'd
be lost in the cornfields. I've been there.
Funny thing,
it's
you
flat.
Should mention escape to Iowa. Yeah. Iowa was only 2 blocks away from my prison.
That's right, because you're on the border there, like northern Kentucky to Ohio.
Yeah, very much. It was just like that.
Yeah.
In fact, apparently there was a big flood in Iowa and Nebraska
The
50s. Well, yes. back in the 1950s.
Oh, really?
There was a big flood. And what happened during that flood was that the boundary of the river, the location of the river, shifted. All right. And when it did, it left a little tiny pocket of Iowa on the wrong side of the river when the river changed its course.
Wow.
And this little tiny pocket of land, it's like only like 6 or 8 square blocks, a little village called Carter Lake. And it's just literally 2 blocks up the street from the prison. If you go walking up the main road away from the place, you're in Carter Lake, Iowa, man. It's like, wait a minute, Iowa. I'm in Iowa. And in Iowa, it's only 2 blocks away from the prison. Okay?
Wow.
It's crazy.
Wow. But the prison isn't on that little strip.
We had a flood this summer. Back during the summer, there was a serious threat that the Missouri River was going to flood.
You wrote that in one of your commentaries.
It was tremendous. It was scary. We were actually ordered to pack emergency runaway kits and be ready to leave on a moment's notice at one point.
Yeah.
And so what happened was actually kind of incredible what happened. I prophesized that there would be a great flood and that the waters would rise.
You weren't collecting wood and starting looking for animals 2x2, were you?
No, not at all. It gets better than that. I'm at least a little more familiar with how to bend a good funny story. I prophesied that the waters would rise and carry away the institution, and it would deposit us just down the street about 2 or 3 blocks, exactly 3 3/8 inches past the border to Iowa, and plop us down there, and then when the waters had receded, we would come to the front door of the prison. We would open them up, and we would see the dead, twitching cockroach feet of the ex-warden, whose name just so happened to be Charlie West.
It was full of shit.
Well, no, that was the warden across the street.
Oh, I'm sorry. This guy wasn't officially full of shit. Just possibly full of shit.
Charlie West, yes. who was our warden, and his little bare feet would be out there twitching and dead, sticking out from underneath the front door of the prison. When we would discover this, I would stand up onto a table and make a speech regarding extraterritoriality and divine intervention, and how this was a direct sign from the gods themselves that we were supposed to be out of prison now. Some of the women from the women's branch would come out and see the dead warden's feet sticking out from underneath the front door and start singing the little song about the wicked warden being dead. And
was his brother going to melt?
Well, what we were going to do is we were going to say that his brother, Charlie East, would descend from the heavens wearing the uniform of an Iowa corrections warden, accompanied with a horde of monkey-looking creatures in Iowa corrections guard uniforms, wearing little brass helmets and had wings and sort of pointy
tails.
Sticks and tails. Yes, yes, right. We sort of round us up and hold
us. Because
they
were monkeys, not gorillas.
well, you know, I was thinking more like La Guerrilleros of the Peninsular War.
I mean the flying monkeys. They were monkeys.
Okay,
with tails.
Got a double antenna there on the
the gorilla.
Yeah.
Planet of the Apes.
Fortunately, Warden it didn't happen. It didn't quite turn out that way. Warden of the Prison of the Apes. Yeah, I could see it. It would be close. maybe you ought to play Monkey Man by the Maytals for that. Seriously, you know the one I'm talking about, right?
No, I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
Monkey Man.
I've
got a Monkey Man. I think it's Monkey Man. I'll play that right now. You can listen to it. Hold on. It's really great.
On your last couple of days before they released you, I mean, were you still on a regular kind of detail? Was it like...
Yes.
It was just routine up to the last day?
Yeah.
Did anybody, when they came in, did anybody know, recognize, understand that you were not just moving large amounts of marijuana, of which you smoked a couple probably pounds while you were doing it, and then as an activist, did they say anything?
Well, the great issue was convincing them that I was an activist and I was legitimate. Myself, personally, I found that the whole scene was rather insanely ridiculous. I mean, first of all, here we are, we're levitating ourselves across the interstate highway system, and things are just magnificent.
Just coming back. So you were actually coming back from the normal convention in California, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't like, and if I remember correctly, this as we talk about the time frame, Michigan was moving to legalize.
Michigan had already
agreed to.
Yes, less than a month beforehand.
Right. So the thing is, for people who are out there, think about this. You're allowed to grow marijuana. It doesn't grow overnight. So if you're now allowed to smoke it medically, where do you think you're going to get it from?
Before
that crop is done legally inside. You get activists like Christy Anarchists that comes back from a internationally known convention of similar-minded activists in California and transporting medical marijuana to Michigan, and is stopped. And, you know, if you were delivering food in the Sudan or through Ethiopia or Somalia or anything like that, or medicine and stuff like that, it's almost the same thing. We've got police out there that have nothing better to do than to pull you over. I mean, what threat were you supposedly doing to the good people south of Omaha when you were pulled over?
Yeah, well, you know, it is considered being a hero. And, you know, let's also remind everybody that when this happened with Chris in Nebraska, they were known as the Nebraska Three. There were actually two other gentlemen with him when they were stopped. Dana Beal, the leader of the marijuana...
Cures Not Wars,
and the global marijuana marches. I couldn't think of that.
World-renowned.
That's right.
Reefer revolutionary.
That's right. And Ibogaine, activist as well. And Jay Statzer out of Detroit, the Detroit Global Marijuana March organizer. Chris, of course, was the Columbus.
And, so it wasn't just a bunch of street thugs just out getting dope, man, and trying to cash in, selling some weed.
Yeah. Now, Jay, of course, is in Ohio prison under a similar incident that happened in Ohio. And Dana, you all know as well, Dana Beale is fighting partially one case in Wisconsin and still has to go back to Nebraska as well. And he's out on appeal and after a double bypass, still in Wisconsin, waiting to find out if they're going to rescind his time that he was given for a case that he had in Wisconsin. So that is three of the Nebraska three, Chris the Anarchist being part of the first group. And so we're glad that it turned out the way it did. I guess it could have been a lot worse, Chris.
Yeah, it was a lot like being in the Army or being in a college dormitory.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say at any time that being in prison for, you know, for marijuana is good. It's not, obviously. Nobody should have to go to prison for it.
The thing I learned about this, that there was a guy that the very first days, in the earliest days of being in the prison, I was in a place called the Diagnostic and Evaluation Center. And the Diagnostic and Evaluation Center is kind of like the worst, hardest days of being in prison. Because that's where everybody, you know, they have real steel bars and cells and little metal shelf benches. And it's prison, like a James Cagney movie, bad prison.
Yeah.
And while you're in there, they're basically just sort of sorting people out and deciding what to do with them.
So now, was it a dorm situation that you had, just bunks, or did you actually have individual cells?
Not initially. When I was at the D&E, at the Diagnostic and Evaluation Center, when I was there, it was like prison, you know, two to four guys crammed into a little tiny room, and, you know, you got these steel shelves to bunk in, you got these little tearing and narrow windows that are about as wide as your hand.
When did they serve brunch? Did you get to eat on the veranda, and did they have, like, linen and matching silverware? I mean...
That's federal prison.
That's for those political people who get that kind of...
That's
where the bankers go.
I forgot they don't go to prison.
That's later on.
Yeah.
This is like before that, they make you go through this sort of sorting out phase.
Right.
Where
the humiliation and assimilation phase.
That's intake phase.
Right. The one that they totally disregard that you're actually a citizen of the United States and that you, the victim of your crime is...
No, there is no victim of the state of Nebraska.
Think about that, really. You were able to victimize the entire state of Nebraska.
Yeah, it's a clear violation of the United Commercial Code. But
I can see the Teamsters being pissed at you, trucking without a Teamster license, man. I can see them guys grinding you up and putting you in, you know, a giant stadium.
They run the government now, and they want... You know, the crooks are running everything, and they want their cut.
Don't hit too much on the truth. You know, there's some people we want to... We'll fight the government. We're still around. There's some of the truth that, you know, some of that should just be left alone.
Yeah. So we were talking about monkeys. Let's listen to a song. I went ahead and pulled up a clip instead of you had mentioned a song, but I'm going to play one. Yeah, that's right. And in the meantime, though, I'm going to play a song from a local band. Of course, the lead guitarist, lead singer... has now since moved on to Austin. Colonel, I think you know who Noctiluca is or was.
Yeah.
And Jason has his own solo work going on, and he's moving on to Austin to live out there for a while to try to break in. But this is a song off the last album.
The one that had the Les Paul and the Marshall Stacks or the other guitarist? Anyway, I tell you what, the whole band
not
the Noctiluca, man. If you get
the bass player has his head shaved with a mohawk. That's Psycho D.
I was a little stoned.
Psycho D.
I was a little stoned.
Yeah, plays the theremin.
Yes,
a little bit. Now that's Psycho D on the bass.
The theremin actually was a Russian invention that they used.
Theremin.
Yeah, the guy was actually a spy for Russia and was used to patent it all over the world. And he was able to get into the various patent offices and stuff.
No, I didn't know that part.
Yeah, and
interesting.
Was presented to Lenin, and Lenin was able to perform a certain part of something. But yeah, the theremin for people who don't know. Anyway, Noctiluca.
This is Noctiluca, and we'll be back right after it. Of course, it's Hemp Rock Radio, and we are at WVQC. We'll be back.
land with the woolly, woolly sky. Cut us off our love. It's a booby tube in a loony Rubik's cube and good reception on the inside. Yes, and my greetings on the inside is brother, brother. From Chicago to the Congo, all eyes on the monkey moon. From Vega to Las Vegas, all eyes on the monkey moon. And I'm all right, then.
Cincinnati musicians, interested in submitting your music to be included in our local music library? CDs can be mailed to WVQC at 1100 Ray Street, Cincinnati, Ohio 45202, 513-651-4171, extension 11, or email to wvqcprogramming@mediabridges.org. Radio edits only, please.
Hi, I'm Colonel Cannabis, and you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on Radio Free Queen City, WVQC.org, Cincinnati's 95.7 FM.
Now, how's that for a great song? Of course, it's Hemp Rock.
That is a great song on Hemp Rock Radio in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah, that's Noctiluca with Monkey Moon. Of course, the band is no longer. Psycho D's with the Ohms, and Revenge Pinata, another group, and Jason has moved on to Austin, but we'll play that in honor of Chris.
That wasn't Steve Austin, the $6 million man, was it?
No, okay. No, not Lee Majors. Well, we don't know when we're going to see you again, Chris. You're leaving weekend to head down to the Keys. Tell us what you're doing, where you're going, and what you'll be doing down in the Keys, down in Florida.
Well, I've gotten an old friend of mine who used to be in a band with me many years ago and who I'd worked with pretty extensively in the past with putting on concerts at the Smoke-Ins on the Ohio State House lawn, has come into possession of the literary estate, the musical estate of a friend of ours who committed suicide and left behind a humongous stack of analog tapes that have been recorded but not released.
Is this cassette tapes or cassette tapes.
Yeah. C90 cassette tapes.
Got it.
Some 1,500 of them.
Wow.
Yes, and each one is completely full to the brim.
And what's on these tapes?
The unreleased music and expressions of a late guitarist and composer from Columbus, Ohio, a fellow by the name of Jim Shepherd, who used to be the leader of a band by the name of V3.
Well, uh-huh. And you said the man committed suicide. Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, he left behind all these tapes. We want to make a record album.
Sure, that's fantastic that you're going
to
do that.
The guy who has the rights to the tapes works full time, and he doesn't have time to sit there and just wait 45 minutes and flip a tape and push a button.
Gotcha.
And so he's offering to put me up for the winter if I'll sit there for several hours a day, 45 minutes, wait, flip a tape, push a button. Wait 45 minutes, flip a tape, push a button.
Great.
And I do that for several hours a day, and we slowly make our way through this giant pile of recordings.
And then he'll be able to take them as
and
clips
and
remaster through an audio system and be able to burn them.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes.
And, you know, if the pot you're smoking is as good as all the people on the other side want to make you believe that you forget, well, man, they're all done. Of course, sometimes that does happen.
Well, no, this mastering project is looking like it's going to be about 2 to 3 years in length.
Yeah.
Because I want to make it seasonal so that I can do stuff in the north during the summer when nobody in their right mind deserves to or wants to or ought to be down in Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sticky down there during the summer months down there.
Yeah, the humidity.
And so you want to be down there during the winter months and not up here where it's cold.
My son, who was in Egypt just right after the uprising, it said being in the Sahara, it's hot, but you know, being here with the humidity is definitely worse.
Yeah.
So
Well, it's dry out there. They haven't had
it
any
really
water.
Does.
That's
yeah,
why
it really
because it's a desert.
Yeah, really, it really does, folks. It is the humidity.
Yeah. So in between inputting these cassette tapes into audio format in computer, the rest of that time you'll be hanging out on the beach, I guess, in the Keys. Down there with the alligators.
I think that sounds a little bit optimistic. I'll still need to find some sort of a part-time job for walking around money. However, I anticipate...
He's going to become a beach bum, Colonel. You know he is.
You say that like there's. I aspire to be a beach bum. I had a chance when I was at spring break when I went down. It was just at Daytona, but a guy was going to put me up in the hotel, and I was going to work at a print shop, and I was thinking, man, you know, this is... And then one other time in the Caymans, and neither one of those. So, I mean, I aspire.
Well, my secret plan is I'm looking for...
You can rent yourself out as a Hemingway lookalike, man. You know what I'm saying? It could...
Nah.
You have to get a different hat. The hat's close, though. Why not? You have to get a little bit different hat, but...
I'm looking for a liveaboard.
A what?
A liveaboard. Oh, yeah.
Something in the 30 to 40 foot range that's a nice fixer-upper and...
Surfing board?
No, liveaboard.
Liveaboard boat.
Oh, liveaboard boat. I didn't hear what word he said.
I have this secret dream of a 42 foot center cockpit wheelhouse catch with...
scuba dive?
After.
Can we put some tanks on it? I scuba dive, man. We could...
Sure.
We could do. I mean, that's great down there. We need a lot of.
I like that center cockpit setup where you put the engine under the sole.
Yeah.
And then you've got like the walk-through passageway with the workspace on the other
side.
Yeah.
On the back, on the back tail is where we just need to put a deck so we can get people in the water. And I mean, hey.
Well, no. That's the nice thing about the center. That's the nice thing about the center cockpit is that you've got the two cabins, fore and aft, before and after the cockpit, right? So that you. Because you've got the smaller accommodations up in the bow, right? And then in the stern, you have the master's cabin. And directly underneath the cockpit sole, which is in the center, you have the engine room on one side and a walk-through passageway on the other that enables you to have a small workspace of some sort. Then directly forward of the cockpit wheelhouse, you have the salon, which has the, you know, kind of the kitchen, library, dining room, commons area. So then, and you've got a small cabin forward of that in the bow. Right, this setup, now you can have that whole stern cabin set over to dive equipment and experience and equipment and so forth and so on, tanks and pumps.
You got me sold. I was kind of thinking both ways where you can go. You could do a dive equipment or gee.
What I'd really like to do is I would really like to be able to get this old fixer-upper and fixer-upper and take it around the Horn.
Hmm.
I would dearly love to take it around.
Okay,
the
you
Horn.
Lost a passenger and then me right there. We're down around the islands, the Keys, where I can see it. We could do some scuba diving. Deepest down there is about 60 feet. I'm right there, man. We're in the warm water. We're down there with the women who wear bikinis who don't mind having large things stuck in their mouths for a very long time. I'm talking about the regulator, folks, and snorkels.
Yeah,
get your minds
right
out of the gutters. You know, I'm right there with you, but when you start talking about going around the Horn, they got storms and stuff like that. If I'm on an aircraft carrier, I'm still not too cool with it, man. I mean, get me out that far in the ocean.
Hmm. Well, see, if I figure if I can go around to California the old-fashioned way, that's something to be satisfied with.
I'll come
the
down and visit you.
Boat, wow, yeah, that's yeah. We'll send me a postcard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On
well,
hemp paper.
See if I. Well, you know, the problem with that hemp paper, that, what am I thinking? It might survive.
If you probably find it. We're going down through South America, man. I mean, most of the other world, folks, the world grows hemp. It's grown all over the place, man.
That's right.
The world grows hemp. You know, it's only us. I mean, a lot of the products that we get, Converse gym shoes and stuff, is coming through, unfortunately, communist China. And some of the stuff's made here. Some of the stuff's, the fiber comes in from Canada. Of course, you know, with the United States import laws, that you have literally almost 100% tax on the cost of it. So if I'm importing $100 worth of hemp, it's going to cost me $200. Kind of hard to compete.
Right.
You know. With that, but there are, like I said, again, a lot of products out there that weren't even around 20 years ago, and including these hemp papers I'm looking at right now, which we just smoked. And they worked.
Remember seeing hemp papers 20 years ago.
That's true, but
maybe 18 years ago, give or take.
They were definitely one of the.
Well, 20 years ago isn't so far back as you may think.
Yeah,
true.
It was two nights.
Almost
ago.
92.
It's like 2 nights ago, and I got kids that require, slightly older than that. So that 20 years is not anything, folks.
Yeah. Now I'm going to take a segue that I was going to take before you mentioned about
a two-wheel vehicle.
Yeah,
that you can sit on.
Yeah,
and
like
it
those things.
Fall
yeah, yeah. You said about what Chris looks like now. You know, he would be perfect for a guest at the cafe that my guest, which officially is Tuesday, because today is Friday. So, but if you're listening to this on Hemp Rock Radio on Monday from WVQC air, it'll be tomorrow's program. We'll say it like
that. It's tomorrow's program, but you're actually today if you're still breathing and listening.
Yes.
And of course, if
yes.
you're driving, please keep your hands on the wheel of the car.
That's right. That's right. But my guest tomorrow, of course, is George Clayton Johnson, writer of, I believe, 7 episodes of Twilight Zone and numerous other fantastic works. But from the time of 1958 through about 1964, about 4 years total, him and two of his buddies, an artist and a musician, had a cafe in the L.A. area called Cafe Frankenstein, and it had a plate glass window out in front that had the monster on it, you know, sitting at the cafe. And they were harassed by the local townspeople and everything because the church and women's groups didn't believe that anybody but churches should be allowed to use stained glass window, you see. And it was kind of a beatnik club, you know, where they sat around with the poets snapping their fingers, you know. Chris would be perfect at the Cafe Frankenstein. Chris
just
the anarchist,
like,
Ryan.
It's a groove.
That's
man.
Right. It's groovy.
Daddy-o,
man.
It's
groovy. Man.
Now, just don't you get all so carried away. I have seen the finest minds of my generation destroyed by madness.
Yes. Well, I'm one of them.
Between madness, the difference between genius and madness is a razor thin
very much,
line.
Very much,
folks.
Very much. Well, Chris, I'm so glad you got to sit in with us for Hemp Rock Radio for your first Outside the Wall segment, and hope to get you on again, whether it be on the telephone or on your next trip, which would be back north come spring. And now, Colonel Cannabis, you're here. You haven't been on the show with us for a while. What's been going on in your life?
I can tell you that the summer growing season was very tough in the area here. This was one of the wettest seasons on record.
For all produce.
For all produce. The middle part of the early part of the summer, it rained for like 2 months, and then it didn't rain for like 6 weeks. And then we had extremely hot temperatures. If you remember, when you have a index, heat index of over 100, you have 99% humidity, and the physical temperature is 98 and above. There's not much room for the plants to respirate. So the marijuana militia was out trying to help in the fields and trying to do what we can and offer. But it was not the best in the area. But luckily, there are those like newfound tunnels that were just found like last week. That is,
and I heard about
that. It's like 100 tons. It's like it was so much.
Yes, well, of course, you know, it is so difficult to get that respiration going. You have to go out there and get those young farm boys to carry those huge handheld leather bellows and push that air around those plants and yeah. Poof, poof.
Now, the tunnel they found here was going from TJ into the United States.
Tijuana.
Yeah, in Tijuana, going into the United States. It was a 40-foot down. It was a, I believe, 4-foot square tunnel that was completely encased with lights and power and a tracked system. They had hydraulic lift.
Was it like leftover from like a mine or something?
No. This was freshly built within the last 6 months. The latest tunnel that they busted from TJ.
I heard about it. Like 6 million pounds or something
incredible.
Crazy.
There was, we had it in a warehouse on both ends. They caught like 5 tons in a truck and had a hydraulic lift on the Mexican side that was dropping it down 40 feet into the tunnel that was, boarded the entire way, had lights, ventilation, and a tracked rail system to move the stuff down.
Sad.
Now, this reminds me of something that I saw in High Times magazine back in 1977.
Yeah?
It was a picture of a forklift with several bales mounted up on it and a couple of really hungry, ugly, aggressive-looking Rottweilers chained to the forklift. Huh. And underneath was the caption, "There are two types of drug dealers out there, those who require a forklift and those who do not."
Yeah, I want to hang out with the ones that do.
Think about that operation, man. They at the end of the growing season, the Mexican Mafia, while they're not taking guns given to them by the United States government in Operation Fast and Furious, they actually have to get
later used to kill our agents.
Yeah, later used to kill our own agents. But see, we were going to track them just by giving them away, and magically we would figure out where they went to because maybe the criminals would just come back and say, "Hey, oh, my name is my gunman. I got it from you. I'm a criminal. But,
come get
anyway,
me."
They at the end of the year, the Mexicans have a sport of seeing who can drill how many tunnels across the border. If you look at any map, it's pretty much perforated there.
How close is the border to the San Andreas Fault? I hope it doesn't start affecting
something. I tell you what, there's many holes that they put under there, and folks in Cincinnati and other places look around out there. There's a lot of Mexicans up
sinkholes.
Here from the some of the other Mexican drug cartels that aren't just pushing the marijuana, and I'm talking about heavier drugs.
Yeah.
And
when I was a boy, I seem to remember a series of holes drilled in the mountainside along the freeway. God only knows what they were doing in those holes back there in the side of the hill.
Yeah.
Big concrete tunnels stretching away deep under the side of the Cincinnati hillsides. What were they doing?
Making a highway.
No, they weren't making a highway. They wished they had some sort of a thing there, but I thought it was where they kept the monsters.
Oh, yeah.
They did dig a big hole. We've got one of the biggest retaining walls out there in Mount Adams. They drilled like 400 yards into there and then stuck the big wire set. That wall, that retaining wall that's holding up those ramshackle buildings. It's one of the largest walls of its type. So, but anyway.
There's the underground Plummet Mall.
That's absolutely true. I think it was going to connect with our defunct subway system.
That's where it was going to be, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it would all run right together, all that. The tunnel that was running was actually a recent one, and they had caught, it was going into a huge warehouse that had like in excess of like a dozen truck loading spots, and they had caught, I mean, it was like 5 tons here and 40 tons there and another 20 tons there and here, there, everywhere, there were tons and tons and tons of weed. And so there's lots of these tunnels pop up every year. Just to move the weed, and there's lots of smaller tunnels that are used to move people and stuff.
Yeah, they're
like
moving
heroin.
People. And, yeah, they're moving people,
and heroin
and stuff. Yeah,
folks, heroin.
And see, now doesn't that
coming from the TJ
the gang, the Juarez. Sorry, not TJ, Juarez.
Yeah, there
the
too.
The Juarez gang is in town, man, I'm telling you.
And, you know, doesn't that attest to why the drug war should end and it should just be allowed to come in?
You were talking about security.
It's just dangerous.
If you're talking about security, folks, I mean, this is one thing that's absolutely true. You know, they get bales of marijuana in the United States, they could put a nuclear bomb into that. So the last thing we want to do is to let terrorists, although usually your normal, I'm not trying to profile, but let me see, 17 out of the terrorists that took the planes in came from Saudi Arabia. Let's say
not
they
Mexico.
Were, not Mexico. Say or they were Canada. Trying to come through Mexico. I was thinking that Pedro, Juan, and all them down there might notice the difference. But the point being is if they can do it, the terrorists can do it too.
Yeah.
So we do want to close this up. We want to make sure that there is no reason for these massive amounts of people to have to come in. So let's look at our immigration laws. Let's realize that we're not going to be out there picking the damn beans and crap. Let's make sure that the people are actually picking our foods have decent wages and decent places to live, and let's treat them like human beings. Let's have some kind of decent way to get somebody in here and get legal. I had heard something from a guy from India that they can't get their legal green cards because the government just won't accept them, so that they have to keep reapplying and they have to keep giving the government thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And I mean, if that's the way it is, if it's going to cost, well, then make it even and across the board. But so there's things we can do, but definitely let's, if we legalize, regulate, you know, we can solve a lot of the problems. But one thing I want to tell you, and Chris is here to attest to you, that if you're smoking a joint today, tonight, tomorrow, if your lips are touching a bong, if your hands are passing over a bowl, if you've got weed in front of you in a baggie or in a pill bottle, that is something that was not stopped at a checkpoint. It wasn't ratted out by some narc. It wasn't found out in the field and destroyed. It wasn't stopped on its way to medical patients. That is freedom weed, folks. When you take that hit, that is the absolute manifestation of freedom right there in your lips and activating your brain, folks. The act of partaking of cannabis is, in a nutshell, freedom. The war against it is, in a nutshell, the exact opposite, the antithesis of what this country would be, should be, and was supposed to be, and is just insane. We are fighting a war against a plant that has never killed anyone, and I guarantee you, people like myself have really tried to find out what the upper limit is.
Yeah,
folks,
yeah.
It is for the people who want to get high. They're always going to get high. They're always going to get stoned. That's never going to change. It's never, never, never going to change. But those who need it for medicine, those who need it to, you know, build houses, those who need it to revitalize our economy. You know, what other jobs are out there? You're going to find some new computer that's going to do something? Or you're going to find, this is an industry that's ready to go right off the bat that anybody, you talk about a homegrown industry, anybody can do it. So let's bring it out of the, let's bring it out of the closet. Like the Hemptress always says, you know, where you find one pot smoker, pot smokers are like roaches. Where you find one, there's thousands in the closet, folks. It's dangerous to toke in the closets. So we need to come out as smokers. We also need to come out as growers.
Get some air.
There was a case here in Cincinnati where two firefighters died. Now, they didn't die. They were going into the house, and he was growing orchids or some other kind of
plant. It was
plants.
The fan on the orchids, not the hidden marijuana
it
behind the wall.
It wasn't the hidden marijuana at all. But there is that possibility of people that are
it could happen.
Growers that we want to make sure that if you're going to do this,
those tunnels could collapse with people carrying
exactly.
the marijuana.
And we should be open and above ground about this.
Chris wants to say something real quick.
However, as regards to those tunnels.
As regards to the tunnels?
As regards to the tunnels. As my good friend and advisor, Dr. Strangelove, once told me, if you merely wish to bury the bombs, there is no limit to the size that you can build them.
Say that again.
If you merely wish to bury your bombs, there is no limit to the size to which you can build them.
Wonderful. Had to get that out there good. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you guys
gentlemen,
sitting in.
Did somebody come into the studio, Chris?
Stoner gentlemen. Of course, Chris the Anarchist Ryan outside the walls now. And Colonel Cannabis sitting in with us as co-host. And I'm the Happy Hemptress, of course, as I said, tomorrow's guest, George Clayton Johnson, writer of numerous Twilight Zones, Star Trek, Logan's Run, Ocean's 11, and I could go on. And I can't wait. He's going to talk philosophy. It's the third installment with George. You can go to WEEDRadioNetwork.com and find the first two segments with George. First one talking about his buddy Jack Hare. Second one, the work he's done. And, of course, including the Cafe Frankenstein. Look that up on the internet, folks. It was a cool place. I want George to write a sci-fi making me go back in time to the Cafe Frankenstein. Anyway, of course, tomorrow, same time, same place, WVQC.org, 95.7 FM here in Cincinnati. And WVQC, of course, voice of the Queen City, Radio Free Queen City, and Hemp Rock Radio. I'm the Happy Hemptress, and we're out of here. Can't wait for you guys to come back.
This is Colonel Cannabis, Marijuana Militia, folks. You have a great week.
Chris the Anarchist Ryan, formerly of Columbus, Ohio, and soon to be a beach bum in Florida.
You lucky SOB.
That's right. We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been the Monday edition of Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress, the Burn Man, and featuring the Pottsbury Bakery and Hemp Rock Cafe. Hemp Rock Radio airs Mondays and Tuesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern on WVQC-LP. Find Hemp Rock Radio archives at WEEDRadioNetwork.com.
Watch Hemp Rock TV on Northern Kentucky's Insight Cable Channel 21, Cincinnati's Time Warner Cable Channel 4 and 24, and now online at WEEDRadioNetwork.com.
You can join the Hemp Rockers list at HempRock.com and the Hemp Rock Hemp Line at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP. Please visit CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. That's CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. Hemp Rock Radio, the Pottsbury Bakery, and Hemp Rock Cafe are brought to you by Hemp Rock Productions. Thanks for listening to Hemp Rock Radio and Radio Free Queen City, a member of Media Bridges Community Media Center on 95.7 FM WVQC-LP Cincinnati. WVQC-LP broadcasts from Cincinnati's Computer Cooperative Studios. You can listen online, become a member, and support the station at WVQC.org. Coming up next on WVQC-LP is Jay All Day with Cincinnati's Conscience, where hippie meets the hood.
WVQC, people-powered radio.
Cincinnati musicians, interested in submitting your music to be included in our local music library? CDs can be mailed to WVQC at 1100 Ray Street, Cincinnati, Ohio 45202, 513-651-4171, extension 11, or email to wvqcprogramming@mediabridges.org. Radio edits only, please.
Coming to you from the Cincinnati Computer Cooperative Studios, this is WVQC-LP Cincinnati, 95.7 FM.